Dang it. What was I saying? The human dongle.
Oh, get your finger out of my eye.
Way better now that you've stopped touching it.
Yes, I was...
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
Bing! Fries are done.
Welcome back to Okla Said. It is the official Okla Ed podcast. Thank you for continuously coming back and listening to us to blab about education.
You know, education is a passion of ours, Aaron. So the fact that people are enjoying our conversations on education, pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. Well, you can find Scott at Teach From Here on Twitter. And I am at ebarn73. I'm not really a huge into self-promotion or anything.
Okay.
But, what? Did you say why?
No, I said okay.
Oh, okay. I thought you said why. I was like, no, I don't like it. But
we just did our self-promotion. Thanks for listening.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you do want to reach out to us, I don't think we give people enough outlets to reach out to us.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I'm saying it. Go follow Scott, because he's awesome.
Or follow Erin, because she's pretty amazeballs.
No, you know who is amazeballs?
I don't know who you're going to say.
At OB1_Kanabi.
Yep. Pretty cool lady there. With quite possibly the best Twitter handle of all time.
Do you know what I said to her in the interview?
What's that?
OB1Kanabi, you're my only hope.
Did you do it as a 3D hollow projector thingy?
It was through the telephone, so you had to imagine it, but it was totally like that.
Nice.
I told her I've been waiting a really long time to say that to her. Anyway, her topic this week was on standards-based grading.
Yes. And
how much time do you have? Because
I've got an hour.
Okay, well, hopefully we can fit it all in. No, I'm going to be reserved. Because some of it came out in the interview, obviously. But this is a topic I can get on a soapbox with.
It requires some different thinking from your traditional 100-point scale grading.
For sure. You can convert it. You can make it, pretty for people. But you're not being 100% real if you do.
Right. I know that in Deer Creek, my middle child started and... it was all standards-based grading. And so we got all the communication from the school district. This is what standards-based grading is. This is what it does. This is what their grades are going to look like. This is how, and they did a good job of informing the parent on what standards-based grading is. And they did that she did that at kindergarten through fourth grade. And then in fifth grade, they converted back to, I thought standards-based was supposed to follow them. Like, that was the group that it was going to move with. And so in fifth grade, their regular 100-point scale grading. And so Marin was confused by the point scale.
Yeah.
Because she just had no experience at all with it. None. Her whole career had been ones, twos, threes, and fours.
Okay, so there's a four on your on their scale.
Mm-hmm. But the four was like, you could teach the class. So let me tell you. and they clearly communicated to us, based on 1, 2, 3, or 4, what your child can do regarding the standard they were learning, and so we never expected to see a 4. She's, at whatever grade level that they're checking, she's not going to be able to teach a class on that. She's not a virtuoso anything.
Right, I really like the 4. You could easily let that follow the Webb's depth of knowledge scale.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Yeah.
You think?
I don't know. I guess it depends on
the bird.
I don't know. Personal flavors.
It was something that came into my head.
Yeah.
So standards-based grading was the topic. Should we dive into the questions?
Oh, by all means, let us dive in.
By all means, here we go.
By all means.
What is the purpose of grades and grading practices?
See, that's a hard question. because
tricky.
You could ask that question at lunchtime in the teacher's lounge and quietly remove yourself, and you will have set off a nuclear bomb. There will be there will be devastation in your wake. Because, you know, when you talk about what the purpose of grades and grading practices are, along the lines with homework and what should homework be, I mean, gloves come off and emotions get raw super fast, because you're talking about, you know, the grade of the student, and especially in high school, by God, my kid is a valedictorian and they need to be a valedictorian and they need to get straight A's no matter how rigorous their schedule is. I mean, what is the purpose of grades?
So I hate grades. I hate doing grades.
Right.
So I'm just not going to.
I myself am not a big fan of the grade. I want to have more of a conversation with my students about what they're doing well and what they're not doing well.
Yeah. Well, and so I picked a tweet here that kind of reflected that, I think. I went with Krista Steiner here, and she is at Prof Steiner. She says, I feel the purpose should be to give students enough feedback so they're able to conquer and fully understand the concept being taught. And I was just thinking, like, grades aren't real world. I mean, I'm trying to think, as a teacher, if I gave a C performance, my principal would say, you need to get that right.
Right. Yep.
You don't just get to continue to give C performances. As a cook, whenever I was a cook at Chili's, if I gave out a C level burger, it's going to get sent back. It's going to have to be redone. And so grades to me are hardly real life. I get what they are and what they are supposed to represent. But feedback is more meaningful, and going back and mastering that burger or mastering my craft would be more meaningful to everybody than just skating on through.
You know, it's the whole situation of, you know, when I first started teaching, you know, if the kids aren't on the bus, go ahead and take off without them, their fault. And and so I taught that way for a while, but if you're the only one on the bus, who are you teaching?
Exactly.
I mean, so I don't know. That's a tough one, because oof. So I went with Adam Rogers, and he is at Mr. Rogers Tech. He said, original, I think, was to determine the level of knowledge your students have. So I think if you go back to, you know, the 1800s or whatever, the 1700s, when they first started doing all this, that had to have been a way to for students to understand how well they understood a topic. But I don't think it means that anymore. I mean, I could be wrong.
I feel like it needs to shift. If the goal is to really educate the child and not determine who goes to the field at seventh grade and who gets to go on to college, then there needs to be a shift. That's my opinion.
Oh, okay. I mean, I guess you're entitled to your opinion, Aaron. Okay. If only you could have seen the eye roll that Aaron just gave me. But it's a podcast, so I'll have to describe it. She looked at me with serious face, and her eyes went to the back of her head, and I don't think she could believe what she was hearing me utter.
It's your opinion.
It's just your opinion. But I think those are real good. Them are real good discussions to have, Aaron. You know what I'm saying? Like, we need to have a conversation. I would argue with you that not every kid in seventh grade needs to go into high school. And not every kid that finishes high school needs to go to college. Like, we should provide some different tracks for that. Because, you know, when you walk around a high school, there are students that could be better served in a completely different environment.
Wow, I had thought about students not going to college before, but I hadn't thought about seventh and eighth graders not going on to high school before.
I really think it just comes down to, you know, how can we best serve this student? And not every single student needs to go through 4 years of history, 4 years of English, 4 years of math, 4 years of science, 4 years of blood. I mean, those are important. I'm not saying they're not, but some students need a different vehicle to acquire that knowledge.
I agree with you. So, I agree with you.
Anyway. So, standards base level two. Question two. How would you define standards based grading? And I think that's, it sounds pretty simple. You're grading stuff against a standard.
Right. A standard or the standard?
I don't know.
Ah.
That's a good question. So now it gets all wonky.
How many times do you give a child to hit that standard, to meet that, to try to master that standard?
Yeah, see, that's a great question. When I started gamifying, I gave my students almost an unlimited number of opportunities to reach a standard.
No cheat code for that?
No cheat code for hitting a standard. No cheat code. You got to do it. You got to show me the artifact. And so a couple things changed, and that was just a really profound year for me. One, when I went to mastery learning, and it wasn't standards-based, but you had to meet a certain threshold. You had to show me that you understood the standard. Of the 60-whatever kids that I was doing, a little more than that. I had three classes of regular calculus, so maybe four. Anyway, 90% of those students were within five teaching days of where I had been in previous years of teaching the same course.
Okay.
So they were right there with unlimited tries on certain things. And then I had a smaller percentage of students who were going to run me out of material because they were mastering stuff and ready for the next and ready for the next and ready for the next. And so you can't convince me in a class of 30 that your lesson reaches every single kid the same amount every day. Like different right. kids are going to pick it up at different rates every day. And the standards-based and mastery learning and those things allow those students to grow as they learn.
That's why I really like flipping. Because when a student is ready to move on and five aren't, mm-hmm. they can. Mm-hmm. If the teacher or if I have prepared the videos right. with enough time in advance, you know?
Right.
I try to, over my summer times, make enough content that I can be several weeks ahead if I need to be. It does get tricky. I mean, I hear teachers talk about how they would be on so many different levels at different times, and I've got this kid here and this kid here, and I get that. My first year doing this was insane.
Yeah.
But once you get it, once you get the flow of it, there is so much more real learning. And that's when I think, that grade levels should be more fluid. I really do.
I kind of got into a Twitter discussion one night with a guy, and we were talking about grade levels based on age and grade levels based on ability. And I was like, let's talk about ability here. And yeah. he was like, nope, grades. And there's arguments for both. I'm not trying to stoke a fire with that one, but gosh, I just feel like somehow the way we do things with grades and homework and our like quote unquote traditional way of documenting a student's growth is
it's hard.
Yeah.
So I may get into trouble here, but when does that ever stop me?
okay, so for those of you that are averse to things, just skip forward 5 minutes.
No, but I have a kiddo who by age should have been a seventh grader this year,
mm-hmm.
has completely mastered seventh grade and started as an eighth grader this year.
Okay.
But was also in Algebra 2 this year. Right. And so he is just and the minute I see him get a B,
yeah,
we'll have a conversation, you
right.
know?
Right.
He's not only and it's not just one subject. He's really good at math. But I won't let him move on unless every subject area has been hit and met and exceeded and he's just doing amazing. On the flip side of that, I've got kids who need to go a little past May in order to finish a grade level.
Right.
You know, and without retaining them, because you retain them and then they have a whole year to make up.
I mean not
to redo.
Right.
And they may have just needed a few more months. And I think we've got to get to a point where grade levels are a little more fluid. I think they got to be able to move.
I think
this kid that I've interrupted you.
No, you're okay. That's okay.
But I'm still on my soapbox. I did tell this kid, I was like, listen, most kids need their parents to drive them to work until they get their license or until they get a car. You're going to have your mom drive you to college, buddy, if you don't slow down here.
Right. I mean, if you're in sixth grade and you master the thing, start your seventh grade stuff. And I don't care if it's October.
Right.
But I'm also of the opinion that if you want to take Chem 1 and you're so passionate for Chem 1 that you want to take 2 or 3 hours of it at a time, then fine. And if you get to Chem 2 in November, no problem. But trying to cram that into some of our current, you know, setup locations is hard.
Well, it's not pretty. And how do you standardize? And how do you give common assessments? And how do you...
Right. Right. Yeah, it's a challenge. Okay. So question two is, how do you define standards-based grading? And I went with Kent Poland here. He's at Kent Poland. He said, standards-based grading challenges the status quo of a point system justifying knowledge. If standards-based grading is done correctly, it allows teachers to adjust instruction to meet students' needs. Yeah.
Sorry. All right. Question three.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is the purpose of standards?
So your question to answer was from our good friend, John Bennett. Did you read that one? I don't think so.
Oh my goodness. Sorry, John. John, I'm going to quote you later too, I think. But I apologize. We're not ready to move on. Answer two to question two. Standards-based grading is based upon the appropriate standards for a particular course. It is presumed that the grade awarded to any standards-based grading activity represents the level of student understanding for the standard or standards that are the foundation of the activity. My question, does it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I picked his. Is like, does it? And that's where it's completely up to the teacher sometimes... most of the time, what goes in that grade book.
Right.
And so you can easily, even if your school likes that, you know, 50% and under is an F and 60% to 50% is a D or whatever, you can still standards-based grade. You just got to flirt around with the numbers a little bit.
Right. And So does it? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, how often have you graded something? You're like, for the love of God, just take that. Here's a 90.
Right.
We've all done it.
You also get into, like, there are so many schools that, like, we got to teach to the test. You know, this is our plan. This is how we do it. And there are standards that are not tested upon.
Right.
And it would seem like it would be pretty easy to skip those. If you were under the gun or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not cool with that.
Right. So now it's getting done. Why was this chosen over that?
Yeah. Right.
So I bet John's considering it.
I bet he is. I'd like to hear what he has to say more about that.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry.
Okay. We got to move along here, Aaron, or we're going to have the longest podcast ever.
I can't get passionate. I'm so sorry. What is the purpose of standards-based grading? Why use it? Vanessa Perez says, because children aren't beef or steel or any other soulless product. And if you click on that in the show notes, there's a pretty awesome thread that goes along with that one.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Hold on 1 second. My son is calling. Let's see. Okay. No, he needed the, he's with his Nana today or his Mimi today. And, they needed the way to get into the house. The thing from Vanessa was hilarious. Like, I was chuckling through my coffee. So June Kim, who is at MPS Technology, he said, best way I can think of when students are given mobile devices with instant access to information, some teams would consider it cheating if you looked up the true false multiple choice cues. We have to change how we assess. Standards-based grading is an option.
Yes.
And I mean, we were just having this conversation in this last meeting that I was at. I mean, we can use Google to enhance our learning.
Oh my word, what?
Yeah. Mean. Yeah. It, you know, so if I'm writing a test question that can be Googled, what benefit have I provided my students? But if I write a question where my students have to Google to help them in the process of answering the question, now I'm providing them opportunities to grow, because at some point they're going to graduate, they're going to be done filling in bubble sheets of ABCD, and they're going to be asked to solve a problem. And it's my opinion that with all the standardized crap that we're making them do, we're losing that problem-solving skill.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm off totally. Okay, done with my soapbox.
Get on it, buddy.
Question 4. If we want grades to reflect learning, instead of being viewed as rewards or punishment, how do we move grades as report of evidence? Move to grades as report of evidence.
That's a great question. And so I went with Vicki Donnelly here, okay. And she is at Donnelly Vicki.
Yep.
She says, I've not thought that the grades I give are rewards or punishment. However, as a teacher, I can see how standards-based grading can help me as an educator. I am, though, going to have to be taught how to use it effectively. Mm-hmm. And I chose this because I think so many people see that it could be beneficial and to not only the educating process, but to the student as well. But where do you start? How do you start? There are a lot of questions you've got to answer before you actually roll it out.
Right. And you know, when you talk about, and I'm just as guilty of this, you know, using a grade as a punishment. When you have a 100-point grading skill and a student doesn't do something and you give them a 0 right off the bat and they're not allowed to replace that 0 with anything, that's using a grade as a punishment. So then the question becomes, what are you grading? And what does your grade mean? If you're grading work that they don't give you, how can you give a 0 for understanding? It becomes this weird deal. Like my son in fifth grade, they were doing their first baby research papers. You know, it's like 8 paragraphs, you know, pulling fingernails off. I mean, brutal, right? And so for class one day, they were going to edit rough drafts, peer edit rough drafts in class. Something was miscommunicated from the teacher. Only half the kids showed up with their rough draft. Rowan had his completed. He just, for that day, fifth grade, left it on the dresser. So she gave him a 0 out of 100 for the rough draft that he did.
Yikes.
And wouldn't replace it later because that was the assignment for the Friday. And by golly, the kids that didn't show up with their stuff on Monday were just going to have to do something else. And so I was a little perturbed by that. And,
no kidding.
And my school district, and if you want to know what that school district, they're going to remain nameless in this podcast, but you can listen to all the other ones and you can find out what school district my students attend. But they have a policy about homework that if it's a day late, the best that you can get on it is a 70%, even if you get 100.
A 70%?
It is school board policy. Right.
Is it knowledge?
Right. So there's issues like that. And I'm sure my current school district where I live is not the only school district that assesses grades that way.
Sure.
And so my question then to them is what exactly are we grading when we say that with homework? Like if I'm grading against a standard.
We're grading their tardiness or their timeliness.
Right. Like if you want me to grade them on their ability to be responsible, that shouldn't have anything to do with their ability to correctly diagram a sentence.
Right.
So if you want to grade me on, if you want to grade me on my participation, if you want to grade me on responsibility, if you want to grade me on citizenship, give me grades for those. But don't tie those grades to the learning that has to happen as part of taking a specific educational course, third grade, history one.
Yeah. Tardiness and timeliness should be its own line in the grade book if that's the case.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whew, all right. I feel a vein coming out. Have I done this? Yes, I've done this, but I've stopped doing it. And I've just decided that I'm looking at how students both in college and in high school. How are we growing?
Yes.
I like it. Hannah Hodge, who is at Hannah M. Hodge 96, said, perhaps we as educators can provide lessons that accommodate diverse students so they transfer their learning to their real lives. With this, students start to truly care. Let's be real. A majority of zeros stem from student apathy to irrelevant material.
Kaboom.
Bam. Yeah.
Did you read your tweet? I totally wasn't paying attention.
No, I did.
I had my rant and I was all distracted.
That's the way I was. And I apologize. This is a passionate chat.
Man, is it hot in here or is it just me?
Well, Q5.
Okay.
How do you define acceptable evidence of learning?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So here we go again.
Okay. I'm going to pay attention this time.
The Googles, especially if you have an EDU account, okay? If you have a domain account for your school, I'm pretty positive it's unlimited space available in that drive.
Okay.
Okay? Like, I'm looking in my drive. Let me just click over here on the thing.
So Epic is a Google school?
Yes.
Okay.
273.5 gigs used.
All right.
Like in a personal account, I think you only get 15.
Yes.
Gigs. But
yeah, I think so.
So in a school account, a teacher can house, a school can house a digital portfolio in the Google Drive.
Right.
Each of my students get their own folder. It goes with them year to year. It
right.
can transfer to another teacher. It can transfer to their personal account, you know? It can follow them wherever they want to go. It can go to another school, wherever it wants to go. Anyway, so the Google is a good thing to use for keeping, housing evidence. How's
mm-hmm,
that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I went with Steve Gilliland on this one. He is at Steve_Gilliland. He said, whatever or however the student shows that they are proficient or mastered the standard. And amen. Okay. Amen. Worksheets happen.
Okay.
The questions at the end of a textbook chapter happen.
Right.
You know what else happens?
What does?
Videos. So many things can happen that are outside of worksheets and chapter questions at the end of the chapter. And this is where those zero standard or zero tested standards come into place. The multimodal presentation skills, the speaking and listening standards, you know, recursive reading, stuff like that. These are things that it drives me a little bit insane because my own personal daughter, and I mean, the world knows now, she's not the best mathematician, right? But she can narrate her process, and if you give her enough time to narrate, she'll get it. But if she is sitting and taking a test without narrating herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's a think out louder. She will just pick the best looking answer and move on.
Look at all the curves here. Yay.
It's just her. But if I make her talk through it,
mm-hmm.
she can totally do it. And so it does drive me a little crazy that and her video making ability, she's got a podcast, like all of these things are amazing. And there is no standardized test in the world that will tell me that she doesn't know things and doesn't show growth.
Right.
But, you know, will she pass it? Don't know. She's marginalized.
Yeah,
and
you
so
never
it,
know.
It drives me insane.
Well, see, with my calculus kids, I got to the point where they had several different ways that they could show me what they've learned. And one of those was the textbook. I mean, there's typically pretty good calculus problems in the calculus book for the most part. There were very few problems I came across where I was like, oh, I need to rewrite this textbook. But I gave the kids choice. You can do this assignment, or you can out of the textbook, or you can work out a few problems and record yourself teaching them to somebody else, or you can teach the class, or you can. And so they had I even said, or you can blog about it, your struggles and your issues. But show me that you've wrestled with this and that you've learned. Show me you can do it. Like, show me you can do this problem. Because, you know, not every kid needs to do 15 math problems. Like, your daughter may need 30, and then she's got it. But the person she's sitting next to may just need to see you work out one. And they got it. I mean, and all those kids are in your class. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, and with technology now, with phones and iPads and Chromebooks and computers and laptops and all these things, it's just so easy. I mean, I did it in math class, people.
Right.
So, you know, anyway, Lisa Crossland, she is at Lisa Crossland. She said, within the standards, you can allow students to show evidence of learning in a variety of ways, authentic to them. Let's move beyond a test. So,
boom.
There you go. Question six. What kinds of artifacts should students create to demonstrate learning? How do we move beyond traditional forms of evidence like worksheets? So we sort of talked about that.
Tiny Scanner. Also, if you want to take a picture of a worksheet, there's this free app. I think if you pay $4.99, it links directly to your Google Drive, which is amazing. But you can take pictures of like shoebox, shadow box things. You can take pictures of worksheets and put them all into, you can take actual pictures and put them into Google Drive too. you can have them use and explain everything while videoing their shadow box and narrate the pro. I mean, they're just and upload it in the Google Drive. Just saying.
Yeah.
The Google Drive. Hello. I don't work for Google. I don't even have stock in Google, but it's amazing.
Right. The argument that I get from math teachers is, well, how do you put all the, you know, the different symbols that we do in math for iPad? And what I always respond to them is have your students write with an Expo marker on their desk, and they can take a picture of what they have written, and then they can narrate it. They can do stop motion with it. They can do whatever they want in almost any app with that picture, and then you don't have to worry about all the different symbols.
Yes.
So they can take a picture of the symbols and then explain what those symbols mean and what's going on and how it's happening. Definitely easier to incorporate some of the technology with classes where you have to do a lot of writing. So English, social studies, some of the sciences, some of the international languages. But you can do it in just about any class. So I went with Shane A. Saunders here. He's at edu_Saunders70. He said, man, what would it look like if students/groups creates projects based on that standard and their documentation was the action plan/steps of implementation. Correlate it to community or school, and then brain emoji, chart going up emoji, fire emoji.
So I don't know if anybody's just listened to Stephanie Hinton's newest podcast. She just put episode one out, but she interviewed Talanya Norfar, and that woman is a wealth of knowledge in the hashtag OklaEd, so get a hold of her.
Yeah,
but
super fantastic.
They were talking about that specifically, using the community to get those projects built, graded, connecting it to the real world, and it's all amazing. I don't want to skip Carrie Akins here, so I'm going to go ahead and give her tweet. Is that okay?
Yeah, do it.
Okay, she is at CAkins0101 on the Twitters. She said digital portfolios are helpful for organizing student-produced data.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that Wes and Ann Beck are Seesaw ambassadors.
I think so.
Jenny Jewell is a Seesaw ambassador. So if you guys know these people, hook up with them on the Twitters to find out more if you don't want to use the Google Docs or Google Drive.
Right.
Anyway. Question seven.
Okay.
Why make the switch to standards-based grading?
I don't know. That sounds like one of them nuclear bomb questions for the lunch table.
It sure does.
So, hey guys, I think we should all switch to standards-based grading. Boom.
There's a mushroom. So I personally think that the way our system is set up now, with I'm going to teach this unit and I've only got a week or 2 weeks to get this unit taught, and then I've got to move on because we're on a schedule and you've got a test to take at the end of this year, or even if there is no test, I've got to move on because you've got another grade level to hit before May. I think it creates Swiss cheese in our children's brains as far as their education is concerned. And when you're moving on when they're not yet ready, or if the info isn't mastered, what are they missing? And is that something that they're going to need for the next unit or the next grade level? And if you're kind of just skimming past that, then you're creating these little holes inside their education. And with standards-based grading, you don't move on until they get it. And that, again, goes back to grade levels need to be fluid and just the whole system of education, in my opinion, needs to be a little more fluid. And you guys can all curse me and block me up on the Twitters, and that's fine.
Insert eye roll emoji. Look, the industrial form that Betsy DeVos tweeted out is alive and well, and it's how we should be teaching.
Right, totally. I went with an Adam Rogers tweet on this one, and he says, if it benefits the students and it's what's best for the students, then that's what needs to happen.
Right.
Hashtag amen.
And I think there's, you know, you can make arguments. You can convince me that there's places where standards-based grading may or may not be as friendly. And I'll listen to that argument. But I think Adam says it best, Sarah. If we can benefit our students and document their learning in a way that's meaningful for everybody to understand where they're at,
yes,
it should be considered. So I went with Dr. John Bennett here. And he's at JCBJR. He said, big if, all caps, if the standards are truly vetted and understood as being important, then truly assessing the levels of learning and usability of that learning via standards-based grading is important for the students. Big, big if. And we know all about all that truly vetted standards business since we've done it like three times over the past 5 years. Hopefully one of these will stick.
Whatever.
Hey, did you know that we're currently 58th in teacher pay?
58th?
Yeah.
I saw that last night.
Our teacher pay is so bad, we had to make up 8 states just to get to us.
Did you watch that?
First
of all, Speaker McCall was almost an hour late. I sat and let the feed go. I was just reading my book, and I let the feed go the entire time. I got on at 4:35, and I was already late. And they were like, he's not shown up yet. It's going to start. It was scheduled to start at 4:30. And so I watched the live Facebook, and he was nearly an hour late. And then came up with, I don't know.
It's another podcast for another day, Aaron. So who do you have for Boom Sauce?
Or maybe it does. I don't know. Maybe we can find a way to make it. Anyway, Boom Sauce. So I went with Lisa Crosland on this one. Lisa, Amazing. Thank you. T's don't switch to standards-based grading because it's easier. It's not.
Yeah.
It is the right way to assess authentic learning.
Yeah. I think there's some good things in there. My boom sauce was a tweet you've already used, but it's funny because it was the answer to two questions.
Yes.
So if I scroll back up here to question 3, what is the purpose of standards-based grading? Why use it? And then scroll down to question 7, why make the switch to standards-based grading? Vanessa Perez. Because children aren't beef or steel or any other soulless product.
Vanessa, I love you.
There you go. So standards-based grading.
All right. Well,
hey, you should never give homework either. Take that.
Oh, you have got too many controversial things going for one episode. All right. Do not bring homework into this.
You. I'm talking to you.
The Twitter chats, they happen on Sunday nights.
8 p.m.?
You should be a part of them.
Yeah. You should be. Did you know? Okay, so I did some math. This might surprise you with my research on Twitter that I'm closing in on. But we average in 2016, because I stopped taking data right at the beginning of 2017. So,
okay.
So in 2016 and 2017, there were over 10 tweets per minute during the Oakland Ed chat hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So there you go.
There you go. Well, next week on the Twitter, we've got Rhonda Schroeder, and I have no idea what she's going to talk about, but I know she's into podcasting.
Oh.
I mean, I think she's got one coming up. She is a principal in I edit all of that out.
Principal in a school.
She does some leadershiping.
Okay.
In Oklahoma.
All right.
So, but she's leading the chat, and she's one of the EdCamp organizers for EdCamp OKC, and I really like this gal. Like, I really like this gal. So, okay. I'm excited to see what she has to say.
Awesome. Me too. I'm excited too. Good. So, that's coming up then.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
All right, educators, you know what to do. Go out and dominate the world.
A man-hour eater?
A man-hour eater.
Yeek.
Triple Lutz, triple axel?
I'm kind of a natural.
Did you fall on your booty?
We're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma.